Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to Dynasty As They Wanna Be, a podcast where we drill into every episode of the iconic 1980s television series, Dynasty. I'm your host, Derek J. Lang, and with me is my co-host, Kyler K. Jafari.
Hi.
We just had a huge disaster before we hit the record button.
I mean, what qualifies for a disaster around here?
A bottle of Benedictine all over the floor. Crash, boom, bang.
Well, you know, goddamn these tile floors. You know, I'm so spoiled by having hardwood in our old place, but
that
anyway.
Might possibly be the bougiest fucking thing you've said on this
podcast. You don't destroy a bottle of, you know, overpriced liqueur that's also hard to source if you haven't just purchased a whole full one. It couldn't have been the bottle from literally 2.5 weeks ago that had a tablespoon left.
No, of course not, because 2020.
Anyway, well, you know, if you wanted any other reason to think it sucked anymore, so.
Yeah, that's the cherry on top. Speaking of cherries on top, we do have a cocktail that we're drinking tonight, and oh my God, I deserved it after having to
swab the decks.
I mean, Benedictine is a sticky substance.
Sticky, the very fragrant mess.
I know. I'm burning a candle now.
Kind of like, my new real estate agent trick. I'm just going to bust bottles of Benedictine on the floor, and
yeah.
Everybody's going to want to buy the place.
Yeah. So. We're christening the kitchen. Anyway, what did you make for us after
you smashed
a bottle of Benedictine on the floor?
I was trying to make a Singapore sling because I think this may be our last opportunity to use Singapore as an excuse to make a drink.
Oh, I'm having deja vu. I feel like
this is a fabulous, you know, it's high toned, but it's also a boat drink. Like there's sort of a lovely contrast in what happens with this drink, which is basically, it's sort of tiki. It's sort of tropical. It's sort of craft cocktail.
Now, let me ask you this. Did you just take the mop and squeeze it into the cocktail glass?
We don't talk about that. Yeah.
It definitely tastes boozy, which I need
another damn episode of Dynasty, which is kind of going on too long, I gotta tell you.
Well, some of these plot lines certainly are going on too long. And other things that go on too long, the Masked Singer is back. One of my guilty pleasures.
That's not Tina. I'm sorry.
I know. You
I'm just
hate
gonna cut that right off at the pass.
The Masked Singer. I think it's silly and fun. And it's one of those shows where it's easy to kind of fast forward through. I like the production values, but.
Oh, I think there's a lot of people who want to say, oh, it's silly and fun, but secretly they're so serious about it. They're like, oh, this is definitely Tina Turner.
Well, the rumor is that the popcorn is Tina Turner, which just made me laugh so hard. And then it inspired me to go down this like Tina Turner YouTube hole, and I didn't realize that Tina really was like a girl's girl. Like, she was like buddies with Cher, performed on her show. They did this song I never heard before called Shame, Shame, Shame. And they're like,
wait, you'd never heard that song?
No, I never heard it before. And I certainly never saw
classic from way
Cher
back.
And Tina wearing, what did you say? They were wearing like car wash sponges? Like,
yeah, one piece bathing suits with car wash sequin straps, like, you know, but it looked fine on the camera.
It was fucking fabulous.
It was one of those like built for the camera.
Oh, well, it was super 70s. And then like, I didn't know she did a duet with Anne Margaret, which was amazing. And I never thought about it, but Anne Margaret and Tina are like cut from the same cloth, you know, and the way they move.
Not from the same car wash straps though.
No, certainly not. But they, you know, they both have big voices. Well, and
Lest we forget that Tina and Anne Margaret were in The Who's Tommy.
Yeah, I guess my favorite film director. I didn't think about that connection because they don't really share any scenes together.
No, they don't. So. But certainly they must have interacted. I'm remiss because I didn't read the coffee table book about it. But
anyway, well, I really hope that the popcorn is Tina. I know it's not, but that would be so amazing.
I think the popcorn is Kirby Anders.
That would certainly be the most interesting thing about Kirby Anders, who's literally making people go unconscious in this episode because she's so boring.
Boring.
Anyway, you want to take a break and get into this week's episode, The Mirror.
La miroir.
Oh, you know French just like Kirby.
Yeah, I know. I know Italian just like Adam.
Today's installment of Dynasty As They Want to Be is brought to you by Audible. Audible is offering our darlings a free audiobook with a 30-day trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/nastypodcast. That's NASTY podcast to browse their unrivaled selection of audio programs. You know, they have everything on there, Kyler. They even have my favorite Stephen King novel, The Stand. So you can go on there and give it a listen. Get ready for the rebooted mini series. They're doing another Stand. Did you know that?
I mean, of course they're doing another Stand, but no, I didn't know that.
Whoopi Goldberg's in it.
Whoopi.
Even if that doesn't interest you, there's so much material on Audible. To get started, simply go to audibletrial.com/nastypodcast, or you can text Nasty Podcast to 500-500. Welcome back. Oh my God. Adam Carrington is a drug addict.
Are you sure about that?
Well, that's what the old-timey doctor from Montana said during a layover where he came and basically called him out in his own office.
Well, now I feel like I'm remiss for not re-researching the doctor, the actor. But this is his last appearance on the show, or reappearance.
You did say that last time, I believe.
I know. That's what it's like. Every time I think he's going away, he keeps coming back. It's like a bad Guns N' Roses video.
Anyway, that was like kind of a shocking revelation that the doctor came back and said that Adam, I guess, had some sort of drug addiction in high school that made him hallucinate, and it took a long time to get him back on track. So maybe the writers are explaining why Adam is such a psychopath is because of drugs.
I feel like no, the writers are retconning. Like, this is like, let's rewrite this character before it's too late. I mean
he is responsible for possibly killing one of the main characters, so it is sort of a good excuse if you can just blame everything on the drugs.
I'd rather talk about Adam and Alexis in the opening. They're in various states of undress, and it's very distressing.
Titillating seeing Gordon Thompson's little legs poking out of them short shorts.
Yeah, I don't think so. Just because you got a Yale sweat shirt on doesn't turn me on, honey.
He's such a tryhard.
And yeah, for real. And yet that's the thing about Alexis, like, she's just, you know, flitting around in a negligee with her tits out, and like, yeah, no, not tryhard. She's just who she is.
And I love that she shuts him up because he's been quoting, I guess it's like this character trait of his where he's constantly quoting philosophers and books, and then he also like lovingly misquotes
that.
And then she just tells him to shut the fuck up.
Instead of rushing off to the hospital, you should be spending your time preparing for your visit later this morning to Denver Carrington. or you are going to deliver Blake his head. Or have you forgotten our itinerary?
I'm not going. Not today.
You've got to. How does that plain but pithy old adage go?
Oh, shut up, Adam. Just shut up!
Yeah, I love it. You know, this like bizarre Disraeli quote from the last episode. Like, no, sorry, we're not doing literary things anymore on Dynasty.
Well, and I feel like he makes up half of them anyway.
It's all about like cocaine and shoulder pads and oil money. Like,
well, apparently he
cares
likes cocaine
about your
too.
Freaking literary quotes.
I guess the drug thing makes all of this make a little more sense. It also makes the interior design of Adam's office. Have you noticed? I mean, we don't have a...
It looks like a waiting room at a Shoney's.
It looks like the worst example of feng shui ever. Like, everything in there is placed in a way that
Carrington
just makes
party
me
of four.
Uncomfortable. There's like three desks and chairs pointed at the wall, and then there's like a ledge where there's a scale hanging there.
This makes more sense of you know, all about bad decorating choices, which started with that teal blue poison paint and seems to continue with oddly arranged desks and chairs and pioneer furniture that does not really jive with like what we're watching on the screen.
Well,
so
I love his confidence. He really thinks he is not going to get caught with Jeff in the hospital now and all the doctors running batteries of tests. Like, he thinks he can just make over this office again and burn the paneling. And he kind of gets called out first by the worker, which we need to take a second to applaud these under five actors that have been popping up in the past few episodes. Like the woman last week that...
Ellen Morano?
No. Well, I loved her, but I mean the woman who had her tennis match interrupted by Jeff.
Oh, no. She was kind of bad. I mean, I don't know if she was bad on purpose.
Oh, she was so campy.
Going on with that.
But yeah, and then you have the worker who's, you know, poor guy, he's sent in to take all of this poisonous paneling down and burn it, so you know he's gonna be dead.
One thing I have to say is I hate hospital episodes. I've probably complained about this before.
I know you groan every time the b-roll of the hospital,
you know,
comes.
We can go
screen.
To La Mirage. I'm okay with that. Purgatory at La Mirage is okay, but Purgatory at whatever the hospital is, that
I think they call it Denver Memorial,
Blake Carrington apparently bought off a whole wing of, if you believe the dialogue, that's just pure hell. I don't want to go there. And every time we return here, I feel like the story just gets stuck in the mud. And, you know,
honey,
like,
the story has been stuck in the mud. They've just taken the poisonous paint from the office and now we've transferred it back to this ugly ass 70s hospital. And Jeff is just there flailing away.
Because, you know, hospitals are always going to be at least 10, if not 20 years behind in the latest design trends.
In Denver, I guess so. They don't have any sexy hospitals.
Well, you know, if you can't have a sexy hospital, I suppose you could have a sexy kitchen, but what's going on in this kitchen? Because Mrs. Gunnarsson is really running a battleship. However,
it sounds like she's a total bitch.
Well, I think she's paid to be. And
well, when Joseph's your boss.
That's true. But also when Alexis Carrington is your not boss, but this lady that just shows up and demands cold champagne.
I love that.
You should love it because this is the way that we live in the middle 1980s when it's on the upswing, baby. Like the economy's mm-hmm. booming now and Reagan's gonna get reelected and Alexis Carrington's coming into your kitchen in like a bad outfit to just like mooch your champagne. What the hell?
Well, let's not forget Alexis used to be the mistress of the house. So Mrs. Gunnarsson used to report to her, but it is totally ridiculous.
I mean, I think she keeps falling back on that, but let's be real. Like, she hasn't been around for, what, 20 years at this point? So.
Well, and I like that Crystal comes in and she's like, I thought I heard you, and we're not throwing a party, so what do you want?
Something the matter? Just that you're an incredible contrast in moods, Alexis. That sounds almost profound coming from you.
Last night, you were in a state of hysteria over Jeff. Now it's party time.
Well, of course I was upset last night, and rightly so. But I was certainly not hysterical.
Well, it seemed to me you were out of control.
out of control? Is that what it means when I care about a man who means so much to me? Who really counted in my life? Who was there when I really needed him?
How you do protest. What did I do, Alexis? Touch a nerve.
What do you think about Crystal's intuition? It seems like she has really dialed into the fact that Alexis knows what's wrong with Jeff. She kind of mentioned it in last week's episode, and now she's mentioning it in this week's episode.
I think this kind of, the prior episode, clearly Alexis protested too much.
Yeah, and now she's celebrating too early.
Absolutely, 100%, 1,000%. Crystal identified it when Alexis was like, test, why do we need tests? And the lady doth protest too much. And here we are again with Alexis being called out by Crystal for kind of showing her cards, essentially, is what's going on.
That's one of her fatal flaws, is she just cannot be coy about anything.
It really is, because Crystal's really no match for Alexis, but Alexis keeps tipping her hand and flubbing her game. And, you know, that's sort of how they kind of keep the two equal, I guess, in the show.
I was just so pissed when Alexis went to Blake's office and just laid out all the cards that they had Jeff sign over little Blake's birthright, and they were giving up all of the shares of Denver Carrington, and combining that with the damn Logan Rinewood of it all, now Colby owns Denver Carrington. But is this can't hold up in a court if Jeff has a neurological toxin in his body? What is Alexis doing? Like, why does she feel the need to gloat so soon? They should have like made sure
Alexis Jeff was in Switzerland. Really played whatever. Her hand early. You know, if you've played bridge or spades or even hearts or something, but you don't throw out the Jack of Spades when there's, you know, the Queen of Spades is lying around out there in the field.
Well, yeah, and Blake even knew that this was a possibility because he told that lawyer that used to be Cecil's lawyer, like, be on the lookout for something that she does in a air quote friendly way.
I love Cecil's lawyer doing air quotes. Is that maybe possibly one of the earliest recorded instances on popular
this
television?
This is the first time I looked it up in my encyclopedias. This is the first time somebody's ever used air quote gesture on television.
Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe air quotes meant something differently than it does now, but
they were more genuine back then.
But I'm just
going to
take it for what it is, and those are air quotes, baby.
One of the scenes that made me laugh so much in this episode is when Kirby goes to the hospital looking rather sharp and just totally pours her heart out to Jeff. And then has like a sexy dream sequence where they're boning in bed and she says basically that she wants to be with him and Fallon's divorcing him and this is the opportunity for them to finally be together. And then she's just so boring that she literally puts him to sleep and I guess he didn't hear any of that.
Jeff? So much for pouring out your heart, Kirby.
Jeff's not really interested in Kirby. Jeff and Kirby are perfectly matched. They're very boring people who are incapable of affecting anything.
Well, it's also like wrong time, wrong place. Like, this guy could be dying. You know, nobody knows what's really wrong with him. And now you're going to, you know, pour your guts out.
We as the audience know what's wrong with him. It's a bad decorating choice. It's this outrageous shade of blue. That's the problem. But she's also been chasing this guy, you know, for a while, which is weird because she gets strong-armed by Adam. I don't want to say the word, but... And then, like, she goes to freaking dinner with Adam. What is Kirby's drive? I don't understand, because she's kind of fishing in every sea.
Well, she said it a few episodes ago, like, she wants to live upstairs. She doesn't want to be a downstairs person. And then in this week's episode, we do get Joseph telling Blake that as well. Like, I didn't pay for the Sorbonne for my daughter to be a nanny, so you're gonna need to fucking hire some more bitches up in here. So I kind of get that, but it is weird that this is what propels her to want to leave her job as the Carrington nanny and then go be a interpreter for Colby Co. But she only knows French. I mean, is that really a language that's in demand in the oil industry that requires a full-time interpreter? I don't know.
No, then, and that's part of how this show's getting a little bit silly. I mean, I know it's already been a lot of bit silly, but, the stories are starting to wear themselves out. Aside from the Adam situation, a lot of this other stuff is...
not really going anywhere.
No, case, it really isn't.
Case in point, Mark going to Haiti, which that's the extent of where it went, is he went to Haiti and then him and Fallon have, I guess, recognized that they're just friends and they're not going to bone, even though he wants to bone everything. And then they spend like the whole time talking about how great his legs are.
You see, Fallon, a guy like me grows up looking a certain way. Learned to play good tennis, look good in shorts, good legs. There was a girl, a teenager, who actually wrote a poem about my legs once. I was embarrassed by the truth of it.
Which was?
That lots of ladies are ready to judge a book by its deep tan cover.
They're fine.
They're almost kind of inappropriate. This thing in Haiti with like Mark and his short shorts.
Oh, at breakfast, I could see like bottom ass cheek hanging out when he went over to go sit with Fallon.
I was just waiting for like a left testicle to pop out. It was bad.
Oh, I'm sure if you zoomed in, you could probably see.
And you know, he's doing this
testicle
like,
cleavage.
Yeah, this like on the cheap Burt Reynolds mustache look. Again, the whole thing's just kind of
snooze. It's a snooze. And it sucks because they're in like an exotic, fun location. So you'd think like something exciting would happen.
You know,
but
I wanted better for Fallon. It's just...
Yeah, she was having so much fun with that divorcee in last week's episode. I wish, you know, they were on the prowl for...
You know, they would have made great gal pals. And I bet whatever that character, she could have hooked Fallon up with so many much more eligible bachelors.
Oh, yeah. Now, the one thing we haven't talked about is like one of the biggest revelations of this episode. And that's that Steven finally has his bandages taken off and sees his brand new face.
It's kind of a minor revelation, though, because this is... been revelating.
I feel like he's been in that Singapore hospital for like over a year.
This is the problem with soap opera writing, where why do we need to stretch out a story for so many freaking episodes?
It's not even a story. It's medical equipment on his face. Like there's nothing to it. Yeah. They just need to cut it off. But the logic to this is really baffling to me, that they've done no research into why this blonde white boy washed up in Singapore. They don't know where he's from. They don't know how he's going to pay for anything. And yet they've like performed plastic surgery on him.
I think the logic is you're just supposed to accept it as you would at that time. A new actor has replaced whoever used to be that character. But, you know, they sort of try to leverage it in a way where they do the plastic surgery deal with the doctor in Singapore. But then they don't really fully commit to it, because now we're just like, oh, okay, it's Jack Coleman now. Okay.
Right.
I don't know. There's not a lot of joy.
Looks like Al Corley.
Well, that's the other thing. Like, does he look, you know, different from Al Corley? Of course he does, but does he really?
It's not like this was the first show to ever recast an actor before, so I don't understand why we had to take this whole detour down
the plastic
surgery boulevard.
If you want to talk about soap operas, they recast people all the time, you know, and normally it just happens and you just accept it. I mean, I believe in the next couple of episodes, like, it's just, oh, Steven's back.
Well, the other thing I'm curious about is Steven going to even recognize if and when he goes back to Denver what is going on? Because, like, you know, the little girl Kirby is back in the mix, and then, like, he has a brother that he's never heard of or met before that's there. It's like, why even bother going back? Like, go start your life somewhere else. Also, did the plastic surgery make him completely straight now?
Oh, that's a fun thought.
Yeah, well, hopefully next week we get some crunch with this hostile takeover that Alexis is planning, but I just don't see it. I think she just showed her cards too early. I don't think any court of law is going to let this pass. And who knows? They might get locked up for painting the office with poisonous paint.
I mean, burn my paneling and shred my love letters. Tell the kids I'm never coming back.
Now it's time for the part of the episode where Kyler and I choose our looks of the week. Well, I think before we choose looks of the week, we have to choose the worst look probably that has been in here this season.
Wait, you're going to do this to me right now?
I'm doing it to you right now.
Because I was going to do it to you. I wanted the anti-looks of the week.
Well, there's only one.
This episode is... No, there's...
Okay, well, the one I'm talking about is that weird-ass pastel jumpsuit with the cape and the cutouts that Crystal is wearing. I mean, it's got like a bolero tie. It's got puffy sleeves.
It's Calliope Chaos. I don't know what that is. That fucking circus outfit. She's a clown on fire or not on fire. I mean, it's like a vanilla ice cream cone with sprinkles on top. That's melting.
Why did anybody ever think that this looked good? And let alone good enough that I think she wears it in every scene this episode.
I feel really bad for Linda Evans because why she had to wear this for this whole episode, I don't know. Was this like some shaming, like a hazing ritual? I don't understand.
It looked like a sketch that somebody did for Rainbow Bright, the cartoon. And when they were like,
but it's
not
rainbow and it's not bright.
Did you notice that there's like multiple layers to it? Like it's ruffly.
How could I not notice?
It's like a lasagna that like sat outside and mold grew on it. And that's what it looks like now.
That sums it up. I don't.
It's not a fashion choice.
I could sit here and riffle on it all I want, but yeah, bad lasagna.
You mean ruffle on it? So, what was the actual look of the week that you liked?
Oh no, I have another non-look of the week. Can we talk about Alexis's weird Dr. Pepper outfit?
Oh, this isn't your look of the week?
What the hell is this? No, it's terrible. It's like this weird burgundy. I mean, you know, you have her in her typical, you know, high-shouldered cut suit, but it's also with a gray fox fur. She's looking like
and
a can of Dr.
Pepper. And she is slinging that fur around.
Oh, yes.
On the bed.
Oh, yes, honey. She's
on
so effervescent. She's so bubbly.
Oh, well, she's but a pepper. I'm a pepper. You're a pepper.
It's... I don't think it's a good look at all.
Well,
there's this
I don't
weird
think
thing
it's
about
as...
burgundy in the 80s. Like, people went for burgundy, and they thought burgundy was a nice color. And I don't know. Maybe in context it was, but not universally, and certainly not today.
Well, it's not her best, but I didn't think it was her worst either. And I appreciated that the hat matched the rest of the outfit. And
that hat is another, it's another hot glue gun affair.
My God.
It's they just cut some stuff around and some felt and put a veil with some hot glue on top. And
now be honest with me.
It all just happened to be burgundy.
Are you having such a visceral reaction because this reminds you of that bottle of Benedictine that just fell over before we started recording and that's why you hate this outfit so much?
No, this doesn't look or taste anything like Benedictine.
So what was your actual look of the week?
Oh,
please answer
my
me.
Look of the week was most definitely Mazdef. Fallon in the canoe neck, blue with white horizontal stripes.
I don't even remember.
Knit
what scene
dress.
Was that?
You wouldn't remember it. It's kind of a throwaway outfit. However, given what's been going on in this episode, this is kind of the only thing that I can clinch.
I mean, I think the Fallon in resort wear is a win. I think they finally figured out what looks good and fashionable on her.
Fallon on vacay is kind of my baby.
I have to say there wasn't anything that I really loved, but even though she's as boring as the wallpaper that they're going to put up in Jeff Colby's old office, I did like Kirby's outfit, that tan where she wore like a shot.
Oh,
to the
no,
side.
That's another anti-outfit.
And
me.
Her hair.
But I'm going to let you talk.
Well, I just was going to say her hair never looked better. She had a side pony swept over her shoulder. And I don't know. It just seemed like it was one of those like boho outfits, but like done in a way that was elevated in fashion and not like knockoff Stevie Nicks.
Boho. It's clearly
prairie.
From like, you know, Neiman's, and it costs a lot of money. And it's like knitwear that it's like, you're paying a lot of money for cheap material. But all that aside, it's not Kirby. Kirby's been very much represented in black and red, sometimes primary colors. And here she's like, she's going to try out some beige, some safari look, some leopard print. You know, it's not Kirby. Like, this is not what she does. You're right, her hair does look good here, but nothing else is working.
Sacre bleu. That's it for this installment of Dynasty As They Want to Be. Kyler, thank you so much for joining me.
Either this wallpaper goes, or I do.
I want to thank the artist Lindsay Mound, who designed our gorgeous logo and graphics on our site, and DJ Jugo, who did our theme song. Oh, and you guys, you got to get in on this. We have social media accounts. Nasty Podcast on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook.
So much.
The conversation continues. It's
click
not
the
just
bell,
on
smash
this
podcast. Goddamn like button.
Well, that's a YouTube thing. We don't have that. But do subscribe to this podcast. That's the future. Let's continue talking about the present.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.